13. 10. That was the number of times Farouk Lane had seen Liliana the Visionary switch ages in pursuit of the perfect trap for the Potomac Zeds. Before the Potomac Zeds had come along, the moderators had simply pursued every Zed and every lead a Visionary had shared with them. The details of the vision were researched and located, and then the Zed was tracked and killed. That would no longer work. Locke asked the moderators for new ideas. Nobody had one. Nobody but Farouk Lane. It had come to her after they'd left the run-down museum, provoked by the image of the tree reaching through the split-open roof. A tree in a very surprising place. Several weeks before, a fortune-teller at the underground ferry market had hissed at her, "If you want to kill someone and keep it a secret, don't do it where the trees can see you." Maybe, she thought, that was how Bride was getting his intel. Implementing her idea was rocky at first. Visionaries weren't jukeboxes. The moderators couldn't put a quarter in and request a vision of a Zed located in a treeless place. Visionaries were more like weather systems, and their visions were like tornadoes where the center always contained a Zed and a fiery end of the world. Scrolling through tornadoes was impossible, but they all traded in impossibilities now. Liliana drove herself to a vision again and again for Farouk Lane, trying to skip ahead to a different future, a treeless future. 9. The number of injured civilians so far. The visions were so risky, Farouk Lane worked out quickly that the teen version of Liliana was the most dangerous because she hadn't yet developed any sense of when one was coming on. One minute she could be paging through blank journals in a bookstore with Farouk Lane, and in the next, disaster. Parsifal, the previous visionary, hadn't cycled between ages until the very end of his timeline, when he started to lose control of his ability to turn them inward. Locke had gingerly suggested this method to a crying teen Liliana after a particularly unexpected vision had decimated a handful of nearby squirrels. "That just sounds like slow-motion suicide," Liliana had told him. He hadn't had an answer for her. The moderators were always making judgment calls about whose life was worth saving and whose wasn't, and they hadn't, to this point, ever come out on the side of the visionaries. But Farouk Lane had. "It's not Liliana's fault she's dangerous," Farouk Lane had said. "She tries to make sure no one else is around. I don't think we should try to convince her to turn it inward." Locke had been dubious. Now who's committing slow-motion suicide? 8. The number of yarn shops Farouk Lane had visited until the oldest Liliana found enough skeins in the color that she said would suit Farouk Lane. This Liliana had a good sense of when visions were coming on, which meant time with her could be spent less on survival and more on creature comforts. Ancient Liliana was very much about domestic pleasures. Knitting. She was intent on teaching Farouk Lane because she remembered teaching her. This was the strangest part of the oldest Liliana. She remembered a lot of what she'd already lived through, and a lot of that seemed to involve Farouk Lane. In her past. In Farouk Lane's future. Somewhere along their collective timelines. Thinking about it too hard hurt Farouk Lane's brain. "Thank you for standing up for me," the old Liliana told her once in her precise, gentle way, "about turning the visions inward." "Did you remember me doing that?" Farouk Lane asked. "It was a very long time ago, so it was a lovely surprise to be reminded. Well, not a surprise, a gift. I knew you were a good person." Farouk Lane wished she'd met Liliana before she'd met the moderators. 7. How many meetings the moderators held to work out the logistics of an attack that would occur without being in the presence of a tree at any stage? A good deal of these get-togethers were devoted to debating if getting information from trees was even possible. Farouk Lane thought disbelief was a waste of time when their quarry was also impossible. Some of these meetings were spent discussing the Potomac Zeds, their backgrounds, their families, their hopes and dreams. They got a hold of Jordan Hennessy's father and asked him if he had any idea where she was.
"I thought she was already dead," Bill Tower said. He sounded disappointed, if he sounded anything at all.
"Huh."
They got a hold of Ronan Lynch's boyfriend's Harvard roommate.
"They broke up after he trashed our dorm," the student said in a plummy voice. "I never expected to hear his name again, honestly. What did he do now?"
They tried to find Ronan Lynch's brothers, but after the attack that had cost Bayos his arm, Declan and Matthew Lynch had gone off the radar. "Their stuff is gone from the townhouse," one of the moderators said, somewhat impressed. "Did anyone see them come back for it?" No one had, and no one knew a damn thing about Bride.
Six. How many got away?
Six Zeds who would have previously been targets were saved from death by their proximities to trees in Liliana's visions. Locke would have still liked to have killed them, but the trees would tattle their plans. Trees. They were everywhere once you started regarding them as the enemy, lining sidewalks, sprouting from green islands in parking lots, nodding at the edges of farms. For a little while, it seemed like there might not ever be a vision without trees in it. Several times, Farouk Lane had to beg them to keep their eyes on the prize. Did they all want to look like fools again? Really, she was glad to stop killing for a bit. She hadn't counted how many deaths she'd been responsible for that year, because she was worried it would be 23. She and Nathan would be even Stephen.
Five. How many agencies cooperated in the planning of the attack on the Pennsylvania farm?
Deep in a broad valley, the closest trees were acres and acres away. Thanks to the agency coordination, the moderators were equipped as they had never been before. Some wore noise-canceling headphones. Others wore protective goggles. There were dogs with keen noses, trucks with keen armor, a guy with a flamethrower, a woman with a stinger. This might be the only chance they had to corner the Potomac Zeds. It had to count.
"No hanging back like you did the other times, Carmen," Locke said, not cruelly, but firmly. "This is your plan. You take lead. Bring Liliana."
Farouk Lane swung wildly between hoping she was right and fearing she was wrong. This could be the attack that ended it all.
Four. The number of Zeds in the big stone house when the moderators broke through the door.
There was just a second to see the scene. The Potomac Zeds arranged around a formal sofa like a portrait. Rhiannon Martin, towel in hand, face shocked. Jordan Hennessy crouched on the sofa arm like a cat. Ronan Lynch, black liquid oozing down his face, slumped against Bride. A second to think, it worked. Well, they were visible, which was already an improvement. And then Farouk Lane glimpsed a silver orb flying toward her. Farouk Lane wasn't sure how she even saw it in time, but her arm was already swinging her pistol. It connected with the orb like a small baseball bat and knocked it right through the window pane. "Hello, and fuck you," Hennessy said, pulling out a brilliantly bright sword. Then it was chaos. There were bursts of gunfire. Tremendous swipes of light arced through the dim hallways. Someone screamed in a very unself-conscious way. A voice rose. "Hennessy, what are you waiting for? Now!" They braced themselves for a dreamt horror, but no dreamt horror came. There was just a frantic race outside as the agency woman fired the stinger directly into the house. What ensued seemed to be an ordinary foot chase, an ordinary gun battle. How astonishing that these things had become commonplace to Farouk Lane. How astonishing that the Zeds had not yet unleashed anything worse.
Three. The number of yards Farouk Lane discovered were between her and Jordan Hennessy.
She had been trying to find a place where she wouldn't get shot in the crossfire. She dimly suspected some of the moderators might take pleasure in the excuse and had been pressed against the barn, which still smelled of the turkeys that had lived and died in it. She had no idea where Liliana was. Everything was masks and riot shields and faceless agents like a war zone. But there was Jordan Hennessy, staring up at two figures moving through the commotion, Bride and Ronan Lynch, the first dragging the second. Ronan Lynch's face was still streaming that black ooze, and even from here, Farouk Lane could see his chest heaving for air. They were being rounded on by moderators, but Bride was keeping them at bay with a sunfire sword, one of the two weapons they'd used to get away on the banks of the Potomac. Its mate, the Starfire Blade, rested securely in one of Jordan Hennessy's hands just a few yards from Farouk Lane, its blade dripping moonlight and malice. Jordan Hennessy's eyes glittered with fury as she surveyed the scene. Farouk Lane was surprised to feel terror. It liquefied her knees, loosened her fingers. The Zed hadn't seen her there, crouched in the shadow of the turkey house, but she would if Farouk Lane tried to lift her gun, and Farouk Lane knew what that sword did. She'd have less of an arm than Baos before she could even scream.
"Hennessy!" Bride shouted. "Now, if ever!"
2 seconds before the nightmare appeared. In the first second, Hennessy put a little bit of dark cloth over her eyes. Oh, it was a mask. Farouk Lane saw it was a mask now. She'd forgotten the Zeds used them at the previous attack, and slumped to the ground in instant sleep. After the next second, as Farouk Lane lifted her gun to shoot the sleeping Zed, there was the nightmare. It was hell. It was shape. It was non-shape. It was form. It was non-form. It was checkered and growing. It was shriveled and grasping. Farouk Lane didn't want to look at it, but she wasn't going to look away. There was not much of it. And even though it didn't seem to have a proper body, there was a distinct feeling that it was abbreviated. There was supposed to be more of it. It was severed, partial, and it hated Jordan Hennessy. The hate was bigger than anything else about it. Farouk Lane could hear it like a battle cry and a sob. But Jordan Hennessy didn't lift a finger to shield herself. She was frozen on the ground, mask slid to the side, eyes horrified and miserable. The star sword sputtered beside her in the grass, throwing moonbeams a few inches here and there. It was clear that whatever the Zed had intended to bring from a dream, this was not it. This thing wanted to kill Jordan Hennessy. Farouk Lane should have let it. But instead, she leapt forward and seized the star sword. She only had a moment to feel the warmth of its hilt, the glory of its purpose, the strangeness of its power, and then she sliced through the nightmare with the blade. There was a silent shudder as the nightmare splintered. Farouk Lane slashed again and again. This weapon drove it back so completely that it seemed to have been made to drive it back. To decimate it, she slashed and slashed until the final tiny scrap of the nightmare somehow managed to dart through the wall into the turkey house. Inside, the animal screamed and screamed, and then everything was silent.
"Visionary!" howled another voice, a moderator, Ramsey.
Farouk Lane's gaze found Ramsey standing beside one of the armored cars. She followed his gaze. On the porch, Rhiannon Martin crouched behind a concrete planter that danced with red laser points. If there had been a clear shot, she'd have been dead long before. Liliana stood beside her in teen form, her long, elegant fingers pressed to her teeth in agony, tears glistening on her cheeks.
"Visionary!" shouted Ramsey again.
A red laser point danced across Liliana's hands. Ramsey was pointing the gun at her.
"Ramsey!" shouted Farouk Lane. "You want to live?"
Ramsey shouted at Liliana. Locke was watching him, not stopping him.
"Have a vision! Now!"
Death by visionary. Make Liliana kill the unreachable Zed.
So damn clever. So damn clever.
Liliana was too far away for Farouk Lane to hear, but she saw her shoulders heave with apocalyptic sobs. She was mouthing, "I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry," and everything in Rhiannon Martin's maternal body language was saying back, "It's okay, I understand." Farouk Lane saw the moment Rhiannon Martin steeled herself, and then the Zed stood up from behind the planter, arms by her side. She faced Ramsay without flinching. "We're the villains," Farouk Lane thought. Ramsay shot Rhiannon Martin in the head. 1. The number of people Farouk Lane didn't hate in that entire place. Liliana threw her arms over her eyes as her shoulders shook. She needed someone on her side. She needed Farouk Lane. Everything was going wrong. Too late, Farouk Lane realized that Jordan Hennessy was no longer paralyzed on the ground beside her. She was up. She was running. A suddenly visible car raced toward her, flattening the grass, its rear door hanging open. Through the open door, Farouk Lane saw that Bride was driving. Ronan Lynch's body was prone across the back seat, not particularly vital-looking. Jordan Hennessy threw herself through the open door into the car.
"Someone stop it!"
shouted someone. Maybe Locke? Hennessy locked eyes with Farouk Lane just before she slammed the door shut. The car vanished as if it had never been there. 0. Zed. 0. No more, thought Farouk Lane. No more.